It's the Joy Cardine Show, and I'm Kate Archer-Kent, sitting in for Joy on the Ideas Network. We're discussing this hour the plight of dreamers under the Trump presidency. Before the election, President-elect Trump pledged an immediate end to what he called an illegal executive amnesty. But since then, he's softened his rhetoric toward dreamers. Joining us to understand the history of DACA and how Dreamers came to be is Ed Filone. He's an associate professor of law at Marquette University. He's also the author of a recent Marquette University Law School faculty blog post titled Big Dreams and Hidden Harms. Ed, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
So you say one of the first choices the Trump administration faces after inauguration is what to do about these dreamers. Go back in time for us and explain first how the DREAM Act and dreamers came to be.
Sure, happy to. Well, dreamers refers generally to individuals who are in the United States who were brought to this country by their parents, not through the normal immigration processes, but as undocumented immigrants while they were children, while they were minors. So they had no participation in the decision to come to the United States. They were brought at a young age by their parents, and they remain in the United States. And for all intents and purposes, they're really just like any other young American. They grew up in the U.S., attending U.S. schools, speaking predominantly English. Many of them don't even speak the language of their home country, feel no connection to their home country. And so they have all the same hopes and desires for a future as any other native-born American. The difference is, as undocumented persons, they have no right to remain under the law. They're subject to deportation, and they cannot work lawfully. And so that puts a huge limitation on their future potential, the future job careers, et cetera. So there has been some effort starting way back in 2001 to address this issue, and it was called the DREAM Act, which is short for Development, Relief, and Education of Alien Minors. And the idea was for Congress to pass a law that would extend a pathway to permanent residency and eventually citizenship for these young adults. Estimated to be somewhere around 2 million persons. It never really went anywhere, despite bipartisan Congress. The Dreamers and their situation and addressing it got caught up in broader efforts to reform the entire immigration system in the United States, what's known as comprehensive immigration reform, efforts that would have dealt with some sort of a pathway to citizenship for all undocumented persons, also increasing border control, et cetera. As one part of the broader bill, it never passed because the broader bill rather famously has gone nowhere. And so finally, after decades of frustration, in 2012, President Obama issued a directive to the Department of Homeland Security asking them to, or directing them, to set up some sort of a program or policy to address the situation of the Dreamers and to essentially put them at the end of the line for any deportations and to therefore remove the immediate threat of deportation and give them some security that they could plan for the future and also give them some legal means to work, some employment authorization, and not a pathway to citizenship, not a legal status in the sense of a permanent residency, but just relief from deportation. And so that became what was known as the DACA program, Deferred Action Childhood Arrival. And that's the program that's been in place since 2012. About 740,000 young people are enrolled in the program, and that's the program that President-elect Trump, threatened to revoke immediately upon taking office.
And so DACA and the Dreamers really living in limbo right now. What qualifications do people need to have in order to be a Dreamer? Because there's some very specific qualifications.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's limited to persons who were under 31 years of age when the program was instituted. So there were many people who were brought to the U.S. as children many, many years ago, who obviously were too old at the time the program was implemented. So there was that age limit cap placed on it. They had to have resided continuously in the U.S., could not have left and returned. They had to, most importantly, have passed a criminal background check, so no serious crimes in their history. And they had to either be currently enrolled in high school or college, or a graduate of high school or college, or else currently enrolled in the U.S. military, enlisted in the U.S. military. And there were some fees and other requirements, but those are the primary eligibility requirements.
We're talking with Ed Flone, who is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. He is also the author of a recent blog post about Dreamers, about DACA, where it came from, where we're at. Ed, during the presidential campaign, President-elect Trump pledged to end the program. How has his stance changed over time?
Well, Trump took a very hard line on all immigration measures, as you may remember, during the campaign. He ran to the right of every other Republican presidential candidate, opposed any action that might potentially lead to illegal status for anyone undocumented in the U.S. He said he wanted to deport everyone who was undocumented in the U.S., 10 million people or so. And obviously the Dreamers, the people participating in the DACA program, were part of that 10 million he pledged to deport. So his election created a great deal of anxiety in the Dreamer community. I have had a chance to speak with some students at Marquette University who are participants in the DACA program, and I can tell you, you know, the prospect of having, you know, some security, some ability to plan for the future, and then have that yanked away was really provoking a great deal of anxiety and fear among these students. Subsequent to his election, Trump gave an interview with Time magazine where he seemed to soften a bit on the DACA students. He singled them out as individuals who were trying to make something of their lives, who were good people, suggesting a little bit of a more sympathetic attitude towards them. It's come out that President Obama, when he met with President-elect Trump, singled out the DACA students as people that Trump should look closely at supporting and be sympathetic to. So there's some hope that perhaps Trump is softening his stance. On the other hand, there are, we really don't know. We really have no idea what his position is. He's never staked out any clear softening, and so the only clear statement he made on the issue was the pledge to deport them back during the campaign.
We've heard from immigrant advocates who say they've been just flooded with inquiries and concerns from immigrants who have been given work permits under DACA. You've met with students personally at Marquette who are under DACA. Gary on Facebook says anyone who broke the law to come here has no right to benefit from that illegal activity. We're a nation of legal immigrants, not illegal ones. And those illegal aliens who are demanding that they deserve some kind of special consideration are simply being misled by fake propaganda. How would you comment on this, Ed?
Well, we have a very long tradition in this country, and that is that children should not suffer for the actions of their parents. And so, as anyone is listening, and if their parents had committed a crime, I think they would think, well, you know, if I was a child and I had no involvement in that crime, I should not be punished for my parents' crime. And that's a very long tradition in the United States. And in many ways, this situation is analogous to that. Being in the U.S. in an undocumented status is not a crime. It's a civil violation. But it's one that the DACA students had no participation in. They were not asked, consulted. They were simply brought here at a very young age. They had no ability to dissent or stay back in their home country. They did what their parents told them to do, like many of us did when we were children. And so to assign them any responsibility is misguided. And so I think what we have here is a population who, because of the actions of their parents, find themselves in this legal limbo. And the question is, you know, should we be sympathetic towards them? Should we recognize that they've lived in the United States for many years, gone to school here, have, you know, dreams of going to college and getting a career? Should we be sympathetic to them because we see our hopes and dreams in them as well? Or should we deny the fact that they are very much like ourselves and treat them as if they are others and send them back to a country that they never knew?
Good question right there. Join the conversation at 800-642-1234 about Dreamers or send an email, talk@WPR.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. News headlines from NPR are coming up next. Then we'll continue this conversation on Dreamers. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the Joy Cardine Show. 7:23 on this frigid Thursday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent sitting in for Joy. We're discussing the fate of the DREAM Act under the incoming Trump administration with our guest, Ed Filone. He's part of the law faculty at Marquette University and recently published a blog post about how Dreamers came to be and what the future might hold for these lives in limbo. There's also the personal information to consider. Under Trump, their personal information and that of some relatives could soon be readily accessible to immigration enforcement officials. So what is the next step for the DREAM Act? Weigh in on this politically dug-in immigration issue at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Ed Filone, so what about this data that is out there and Homeland Security having concerns about the personal information of these people under DACA?
Well, that is a major concern. In applying for the DACA program and receiving this two-year reprieve from possible deportation that would be then renewable, in applying for the program, about 740,000 young adults provided their names and addresses and other personal information. And now that information is sitting there in the Department of Homeland Security, and the concern is that the Trump administration could, on day one, cancel the program and then use that information to then, pursue deportation and apprehension of these individuals. And so there is a very real question of unfairness to have the federal government provide a benefit, collect information to make sure you're eligible for that benefit, and then to find out that that information might be used against you. There is a fundamental question of unfairness. Unfairness does not mean it can't be done, however, under the law. And the real question is can anything be done to try and prevent the Trump administration from using the information in this way? And there have been various arguments and proposals floated out there, but I think, quite frankly, the only real hope of preventing such an occurrence, should President-elect Trump decide to do it, would be to file a federal lawsuit arguing that it's an unconstitutional violation of the due process of these persons to have the government collect information for one purpose and then use it for a different purpose in a punitive fashion. And there's some possible precedent for that in other contexts, such as in the tax context, information collected for one purpose being used for a different purpose by the government. But by no means is it clear-cut, and it would require a major piece of federal litigation to try and stop it.
But clearly a lot of distrust about this data that is out there, that exists in the government between one administration, the outgoing administration, and the new administration. How are lawmakers bridging this distrust?
Well, I think, right now the best hope for the Dreamers is a bill that's been introduced in Congress or will be introduced in the new Congress. It's been proposed by Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin. It's called the Bridge Act, and it would essentially extend the DACA program for three more years, give it congressional approval, so take it out of the world of an executive order or executive directive, and instead make it a congressional statute. Therefore, President-elect Trump could not do anything to end the program. And it would provide at least a three-year period where individuals could continue to receive the benefits of DACA. And presumably then Congress in those 3 years would grapple with the broader immigration reform issues and whether to make such a program permanent as part of a larger overhaul of the immigration laws, something they've been unable to do for the last 16 years. Not sure why there's any hope it would happen in the future. But in any event, I think if the Bridge Act were to be acted on by Congress, that's the best hope for the Dreamers here.
Let's go to the phones with Tom in Krivitz. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I guess I'm just a little confused what exactly a Dreamer was. I always thought they were young kids in school, but your guest said when the act was made in 2002 that it included people up to 31 years old. I'm just wondering if that's true. Do we have, like, Dreamers who are middle-aged men now, or is it mainly just about young people?
Well, that's a good question, and I think this is really an issue of it demonstrates the optics of the action and the DACA program. The rationale for the program is that anyone who was brought to the U.S. as a child was not responsible for that decision and should not bear the consequences of their undocumented status. And so under that rationale, it really shouldn't matter how old you are. What matters is what age you were when you were brought to the U.S. But when President Obama chose to act in an executive fashion, he was very aware that this would be controversial, that many people in Congress and the broader country would attack him for taking action here. And so he tried to define those eligible in a way to play up the most sympathetic aspects of the population. And so therefore tried to focus on those who were still, in some sense, a young adult. And they pushed it up to people who were 31 or younger as of the date the program began. That may be pushing the definition of young adult. But in some sense, it's an arbitrary line, but it was one drawn to try and point out the more sympathetic part of the population.
Well, thank you, Tom, for your observation there. Let's go to Will in Windsor. Hi, Will.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I have a question for the guest on veterans that have served in combat that were not documented, but yet they were taken in the military with the understanding that it was a quick route to citizenship, yet many have been deported. So I have a question whether they have legal grounds to fight on to get back in this country.
Ed?
Well, I guess there's two parts to that question. The first is it possible for an undocumented person to serve in the U.S. military and through that route gain access to legal residency in the U.S.? And the answer is yes, at various times it has been possible to do that, in particular when U.S. government has declared we've been in active combat situations. At various times, there has been this route for undocumented persons to enlist and serve and gain legal residency in that way. The second part to the question, though, was what happens if someone then was denied an opportunity to stay in the U.S. and was deported? Can they try to get back? And there, I guess the general rule of thumb in immigration law is you can fight while you're in the U.S. on U.S. soil, but once you get deported, it is extremely difficult to get that deportation decision reversed and to get back in the U.S. And so any immigration lawyer would tell you, fight like hell while you're on U.S. soil, but once you get deported, your hope of overturning that decision gets extremely small. So for those who did pursue that option and they're still in the U.S., they can continue to pursue that. But once you're outside the borders, it's very tough.
Will, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Ashley in Ladysmith. Hi, Ashley.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to share a story this morning about a good friend of mine who was brought to the United States from Mexico when she was a young girl. And she grew up and later in life served in the military. She spent a year in Iraq. And to think that there's people in this country who question where her home is, or even where her parents' home is, or where she belongs, is just disheartening to me. And I just wanted to share that with the listeners. Thank you.
And Ed Filone, you have met with Dreamers yourself at Marquette University, which caused you to become alarmed initially, as well as take a closer look at Dreamers and write about them.
Well, you know, you only have to speak with someone in that situation to understand how difficult it is. We're talking about younger people in particular who attend public school in the United States, but pretty much upon graduation from public school, their options are so limited. Prior to the DACA program, most of these people would not be eligible for in-state tuition for college, making college education extremely expensive for them and their families. They're not legally authorized to work, so that option of working and saving money becomes very difficult. They're pushed into lower-paying jobs that pay under the table. And then even if they do manage to make their way to higher education, get a degree, then even then they're not legally authorized to work. And so, again, you could be a college graduate and working, manual labor. Nothing wrong with manual labor if that's what you want to do and what you enjoy, but if your dream is a professional career and that's the only option open to you, it's a very frustrating experience, and they really question what the future holds for them.
Well, let's go back to legislation and policy for just a moment. What are some other actions that President-elect Trump could take beyond supporting bipartisan legislation in Congress?
Well, I think, as I see it, President-elect Trump has a choice between three options. I mean, the first option is to end the program immediately, revoke the DACA status of everyone, all 740,000 people who currently have it, which would mean they immediately could no longer work. They're immediately subject to deportation. Second option would be not to revoke the program immediately, but to stop renewals. It's a two-year eligibility period, and then it gets renewed. And you could simply say, fine, whenever your current period ends, your current two-year period is up, that's it. And that at least wouldn't end it immediately. It would give people a period of months or years to plan for their future. It wouldn't be a complete and immediate disruption of their lives. The third option would be to simply do nothing. If he does nothing, the program continues. And I think, my hope is that since this Bridge Act is going to be introduced in the new Congress and it's got bipartisan sponsorship and Lindsey Graham is one of the leaders of the Republican Party, my hope is that with this bill coming, President-elect Trump may simply decide to do nothing and take a wait-and-see attitude for a period of time to see if Congress enacts it, and that would allow the program to continue and the Dreamers at least a little bit more time before they have to perhaps face a very drastic change in their lives.
We're talking with Ed Filone, who's an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and he's been following closely what is being done about DACA and the Dreamers. More than 740,000 young people who came to this country as little kids without legal status, and they are in flux on what happens next, really tied up in what the federal government will do about their status. Let's go to the phones, Francisco in Door County. Hi, Francisco.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What would you add to the conversation?
Okay, I'm just for the sake of the your guest there, I am a graduate of Creighton University, class of 64, and I'm a graduate of Hastings College of the Law, a 1972 year I graduated, and I did pass the bar. If you're from Wisconsin, you don't have to take the bar. So I want him to understand what I'm talking about. I'm a Mexican. And when you talk about the Dream Act, you're talking about what, how it affects only Mexicans. We're not talking about people from Vietnam, people from Central America, people from Iraq, people from Nepal, people from India. They're all over the place now here in America. But when we don't like Mexicans. And the reason why we don't like Mexicans is because we stole our land. I'm a Mexican. I'm a Mexican citizen, and I'm an American citizen.
And so what about that Francisco is saying, Ed, that we're really focusing on one population here regarding this overall issue of Dreamers?
Well, I don't think today's immigration reality is in sync with what many people assume in terms of the countries that are the source of undocumented migrants to the U.S. In the last decade, we've seen a decline in the number of undocumented apprehensions of people from Mexico. In fact, it seems more undocumented Mexicans are returning to Mexico than new Mexicans emigrating to the U.S. Really, the numbers point to an increase in immigration, undocumented immigration from Central and South America, Venezuela, Colombia, and other countries to the south. A lot of that is being driven by rampant gang violence and lawlessness. And in fact, what we're seeing is a lot of South American families, especially in smaller towns that are effectively run by gangs, sending their children to the U.S., trying to escape recruitment by the gangs, trying to escape violence, because they just don't think their kids could survive. And so many of the undocumented population is not from Mexico now. I mean, still, there's a large amount, to be sure, but increasingly we're seeing younger children being brought to the U.S. or even sent on their own to the U.S. from countries to the south of Mexico.
I want to ask you, Ed, your thoughts on this. How has the journalistic approach to this issue, the media, who have really opened us up to so many of these DACA people, so many of these Dreamers, and told their stories and followed these families and these youngsters, how has that impacted our perception of this issue?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I think one of the points I tried to make in my blog post is that with the Dreamers, you have a very identifiable group of people. They're individuals who you can talk to, you can sympathize with, you can put a human face on their situation. And so if there were some action taken to end the DACA program and immediately deport these people, the harm would be very clear, the people injured would be readily identifiable, and the blame could be solely placed on the shoulders of Donald Trump. And that makes it somewhat difficult for a Trump administration to act, because there will be a great public reaction. On the other hand, there are many, many policy changes that are coming in the new administration that are going to affect people's lives. You and me and anyone who hopes to retire in the future, for example, there are changes coming to Social Security, to Medicare, that will drastically affect benefits under those programs and will impact our lives. But the people hurt are not as clearly identifiable.
Yeah.
You can't easily put a human face on the action.
And therefore, the
media won't necessarily make as big a reaction to it.
We've been exploring the path forward for Dreamers with Ed Filon, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette. Dreamers, a term used to describe the hundreds of thousands of young people who have stepped up to identify themselves in exchange for a promise that they wouldn't face deportation. What do you think about Dreamers? 800-642-1234. Are you a Dreamer? Contact us. News is next. Good morning. This is the Joy Cardine Show, and I'm Kate Archer Kent, sitting in for Joy. Ed Filone stays with us. He is a Marquette University law professor who's been helping us sort through what might lie ahead for the so-called dreamers under the Trump administration. Immigration advocates say their greatest concern is the new administration's access to personal records of hundreds of thousands of young undocumented immigrants who applied for protections and work permits under President Obama. And we want to hear from you. What decisions do you want to see on this front from the Trump administration? Share with us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Ed, in recent years, New York City allowed for a municipal identification card program that allowed undocumented immigrants to gain access to bank accounts and various city services. Similar ID program exists in Milwaukee. Can you talk to us about the problems associated with this type of data for Dreamers?
Sure. Well, the Milwaukee program has been approved for the city, but has not been implemented yet. And the idea behind these programs is that in today's world, some form of identification is really essential. It helps law enforcement when they're dealing with witnesses and victims of crimes. It helps medical care providers, et cetera. And so to make some form of ID, not one that's used for voting or driving, but some form of ID available to undocumented residents who realistically are not going to be deported anytime soon, makes some sense from a policy perspective. But New York City has now been very concerned. Their established ID program has information on thousands of undocumented persons and their addresses, and they're very concerned that the Department of Homeland Security under President Trump would come asking for that information. And they are trying to grapple with how to react, and one option would be to destroy the information, which currently I believe there's a court order telling the city not to destroy the information. It is a public record. You can't just willy-nilly destroy public records. So I think there is a real concern with how do you protect and preserve that information as a city, a municipal government, if the federal government comes knocking at your door. And quite frankly, I think, in my opinion, the legal option is limited to simply requiring, if the federal government wants it, they can't just ask for it. They have to send a subpoena and initiate a legal process. You can at least force them to go through those hoops. But if they do go through those hoops, I don't think there really is much option for a municipality to avoid complying with such an order.
Pivoting here now, Ed, for a moment, as you look ahead with the Trump administration, what are you watching? And in your blog post, too, you have other concerns about the incoming administration and policy changes. What are you watching?
Well, I think, that was something I started to allude to earlier. There's a wide variety of actions that are going to be introduced in the Republican-controlled Congress directed at the social safety net, benefits programs like Social Security and Medicare, programs that provide services to low-income and middle-income persons and the elderly. And there's really going to be a concerted effort to roll back these benefits, really all kinds of privatization, et cetera, to replace government-funded programs with more expensive private options, increasing the costs for these benefits. And, my concern is that there's a lot that can be done where the impact on people's lives is hidden, it's dispersed. People don't necessarily recognize if their future cost of living increase for Social Security is cut from 3% a year to 2% a year. You don't necessarily recognize that harm, even though it's very real. Those are the actions that I'm concerned about because they're, in a sense, hidden harms. And whereas something against the Dreamers that immediately changes their status is very identifiable and public, I'm much more concerned about the hidden harms that are going to be taking place that we really won't recognize the effect of until many years later.
And in the news this morning, more than 1,100 law school professors nationwide opposing Senator Jeff Sessions' nomination as U.S. Attorney General, as shown by a letter sent to Congress urging rejection of his nomination. You didn't sign the letter, Professor Fallone. What is your reaction to the Sessions nomination?
Well, I think, you know, I didn't sign the letter. I wouldn't ascribe any pro or con attitude to that. I simply don't typically sign letters like this. I think that there are a variety of nominees coming out of the Trump administration. He seems to have intentionally selected people to run departments who have a philosophical opposition to the departments they'll be running. And I think that that is problematic. He certainly, it's not a recipe for efficient, well-working government to have heads of departments who oppose the department's mission. I think that in regards to Sessions, I think that those who are concerned about this are going to have to pick and choose. You can't oppose every nominee. And so the question is Sessions the worst of the lot? Should opponents focus on him, or are there other areas they should focus their fire? But you can't oppose everyone. Some great deal of them are going to get through.
Lots of issues swirling right now, of course, in politics. Let's go back to the phones with Jeff from Appleton. Hi, Jeff. Oh, can you hear us, Jeff? Nope, we can't hear Jeff. Let's go to Dan in Milwaukee. Hi, Dan.
Hi. You know, when I look at these programs, now he's talking about kids in college that are dreamers. Whoa. Don't they have any intention of maybe going back to Mexico, going back to Central America? You know, this has been a big brain drain on these countries in Central America and Mexico. Wouldn't they want to go back and improve? I mean, bring their American values and bring it to Central America, American capitalism, banking, you know, and improve the lives of the people in Central America.
Do we have any indication, Ed, about the economic consequences of Dreamers in the U.S.? What is the impact on the economy?
Well, there have been some estimates of a negative impact of hundreds of millions of dollars if these individuals do not remain in the U.S. and do not contribute to the U.S. economy in terms of working or starting jobs. You know, to the broader brain drain question, I think that what's troubling to me is that these are human beings who, in many cases, get reduced to symbols. People look at them as a symbol of our inability to control our borders, or they look at them as pawns. And, you know, maybe it would be better for the U.S. if they did this, or it'd be better for the U.S. if they did that. You talk to these kids. I mean, they're just people like us, and they have their own personal dreams. And if someone's dream is to pursue a degree and become a pharmacist, you know, who am I to tell them, no, you can't do that. You have to go to Mexico and rebuild that country's economy. We all want to pursue our dreams. We all want to live our own lives. And we shouldn't just be pawns in some government game.
Ed, you're a lawyer. What advice would you give right now to dreamers?
Well, I think the advice I give is to plan for the worst, if you have assets in the U.S., maybe get a power of attorney to give to a trusted friend or family member who's a U.S. citizen, so that if you are put into deportation, they can get access to your bank account or your property and take care of it for you. If you have family members here who are dependent on you, maybe put in place a legal guardianship arrangement, so if you get deported, there is someone who can take care of that family member. Plan for the worst and take some steps so that if the program does end and the government does come and apprehend you, that at least you've planned for it and it won't be hopefully not quite as severe a reaction. And obviously try to tell your stories and you let the public know what's happening here so that they can contact Congress and urge Congress to support this Bridge Act.
So really getting your legal and financial houses in order, planning for the worst. It sounds pretty dire.
Well, it is dire. I mean, you're talking about people who for the last, 5 years have finally felt like there was some hope in their lives of being able to plan for the future, being able to, maybe one day buy a house, and it would be worthwhile to do so because they wouldn't have that insecurity. And then suddenly to be thrown back into insecurity and doubt, it is frustrating for these individuals, and I'm very sympathetic for them.
Such a divisive issue. Looking at comments here on Facebook, Shauna writes, it's really sad and scary for these people. She lives in Southern California, only 2 hours away from the border. There are good, decent people, she says, that didn't choose to be here. She says, in 100% of the cases, their parents fled a horrible country, brought them here as babies or when they were young. It's not their fault. We've been hearing this before, have we not, Ed?
Well, yes, and this is an area where I think there's been a lot of sympathy for the situation of the Dreamers, even going back to 2001, and bipartisan sympathy. And it's very possible that if a standalone bill had really been pushed even back in 2001, that both Republicans and Democrats would have supported it, for this identifiable segment of the undocumented population. And I think it's a little bit unfortunate it got tied into the broader immigration reform, and because broader immigration reform became political quicksand and never went anywhere, this Dreamers issue just kind of got trapped in that, and I think that's very unfortunate.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Ed.
It's been a pleasure.
Ed Filone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. He wrote a recent law faculty blog post on Dreamers titled Big Dreams and Hidden Harms. Find a link on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page where you can add your thoughts on this, the Dream Act, Dreamers, DACA. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and this is the Ideas Network. Thanks to producers Bill Martins and Brianne Shasso. Coming up at this time tomorrow, newly elected U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher joins us to talk about his hopes for the new session of Congress. Hope you can join us on the Ideas Network.